The U.S. Census Bureau began counting the country's population early in 2020, but April 1st was officially Census Day. Every 10 years, as laid out in the Constitution, the U.S. apportions representatives among the states based on where residents live as of April 1st. In turn, each state determines the district boundaries of the apportioned representatives. Utahns in 2018 passed Proposition 4, a ballot initiative creating an independent redistricting commission to advise the state legislature regarding district boundaries for congressional, legislative, and state school board districts. During the 2020 general session, the Utah legislature passed a bill modifying the language from the proposition. In response, Utah Foundation released a research brief and an interactive redistricting tool that citizens can use to better understand redistricting and the challenges surrounding the process. Utah Foundation research analyst Christopher Collard and I sat down to discuss those challenges. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichardt. Let's begin by talking about what originally motivated the report and the citizen tool we just created. What's behind this?
Yeah, so there are two primary reasons we started looking at redistricting. One was connected to the 2018 ballot initiative, which was later revised in the 2020 legislation. Just kind of this brought it up and made it current. But then there's also the fact that the census is kicking off on April 1st. And the census is essentially the very first step of the whole redistricting process.
And so tell us exactly how it works. What does the April 1st date signify?
So April 1st is the day, it's a baseline day when you report to the census. All the data that you should report to the census is based around April 1st, where you were living on April 1st, who was living in their residence on April 1st. April 1st is the baseline day. So then it takes the census a little while to collect all that information, process that information, and probably early, either late this year or early next year, they will have the information ready to reapportion the House of Representatives among states. Utah currently has 4 members of the House of Representatives. It's very likely that we will continue to have 4 after the census is taken and everything is gone through. Once the U.S. has kind of apportioned these out, each of the states will begin its own redistricting process where either the state legislature or committees that have been created for the purpose of redistricting will start to redraw the boundaries for each of the members of the House of Representatives, often as well as for local legislative positions as well.
Some people will wonder, well, Utah is one of the fastest growing states, why shouldn't we be getting an extra member of Congress as a result? Can you just address that real quick?
Yeah, so I mean, there's just certain population thresholds. There's 435 representatives to portion out between the states. We got an additional representative not too long ago. It's just we haven't quite hit that threshold to qualify for the fifth.
Okay, so as we go to redistrict this time, things are going to be different. Can you talk about how those differences came about and then maybe talk about what the differences are a little bit?
In the past, redistricting has been completely undertaken by the state legislature. They do have a process that involves going to the public and involving public comment, but it's just been the state legislature that determines what these districts should be. In 2018, Better Boundaries, a group, put forward a ballot initiative to create an independent redistricting commission. And this would be independent in that the people appointed to this commission, their jobs didn't necessarily depend on how the lines were drawn. Whereas for state legislatures, their jobs potentially, whether they're reelected or not, are connected to where the boundaries are. That can have a big impact on their reelection opportunities. Better Boundaries put forward this proposition and it narrowly passed in the 2018 election. 2 years later, Better Boundaries and the legislature got together and kind of worked out this compromise bill that addressed some of the things that the state legislature was worried about. The commission still stands. There were a few key differences, but the practical upshot is that there's going to be a commission and they're going to get together and come up with a collection of maps that they're going to recommend to the state legislature. But then the state legislature is ultimately the authority that gets to choose which one of those maps, or they don't even have to choose. They can just draw their own maps if none of the recommended maps really fit their needs. And then that's how we can get new congressional districts as well as state legislative districts and state school board districts.
So really this commission is advisory in nature.
Yeah, so it's largely advisory in nature. It is engaged to be very involved with the public. They're required to kind of put up a website, request submissions from the public, have lots of public hearings. But ultimately, they present to a committee on the legislature, and then the legislature makes the final decision.
So would it be assuming too much to say that the motivating factor behind all of this was political gerrymandering?
You know, there were better boundaries is interesting because it was a bipartisan arrangement. You had both Republicans and Democrats. And I think largely they were advocating to make sure that there was just a fair process that didn't benefit necessarily one party or another party, but benefited the Utah public at large.
And I guess kind of give the public a little bit more confidence that the boundaries were being drawn on a fair basis.
It created an additional level of transparency and independence in creating these boundaries to try and give, you know, hopefully give the public a little bit more trust in what was happening.
But is partisan gerrymandering really even a big deal? It's legal, right?
Oh, for sure. So racial gerrymandering is illegal, but gerrymandering for other purposes, either to benefit a political party or even a specific candidate, isn't necessarily illegal. Although some state Supreme Courts have ruled that it is against state constitutions, the Supreme Court has essentially decided that they are not able to judge one way or another on that.
The U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, the U.S. Supreme Court. However, the U.S. Supreme Court is not willing to really take up that topic, mm-hmm. while some state Supreme Courts have. Mm-hmm. But in Utah, and in most other states, political gerrymandering has just kind of been accepted as it's legal, if maybe it might seem unfair to some, but ultimately the representatives that people elect kind of draw lines. And if they do it in a way that benefits their party, then kudos to them because they did get elected and it kind of reflects in a way the voice of the people.
Can you talk a little bit about the sorting factor that you actually have people that will move from one area to another because they may feel they have more in common with the people in that area? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Over the past couple of decades, there's been an increasing trend in polarization. And one thing that social scientists are really looking at is kind of this phenomenon of sorting, where people will move, at least in part, based on the politics of the target area. So, for example, in Utah, a Democrat-leaning family might choose to live in near Liberty Park, where 70% of the people there in 2018 all voted for the Democratic senatorial candidate. A Republican-leaning family might choose to live in Riverton, where 70% of the people in Riverton chose to support the Republican senatorial candidate. The partisanship of an area isn't probably a determining factor of where people move, but it probably is something that people consider as they try to move at a place where they feel comfortable, where there are people like them, where there are people who share their opinions. And it's not really clear how much of the decrease in competitive elections is really associated with gerrymandering as opposed to just sorting, which is people choosing to live in a district that more fully represents them.
I think this is a good moment to talk about the criteria under which the maps are supposed to be drawn under the new legislation.
Supreme Court has ruled that every district should have the same number of people in it. So, I mean, that's a very hard rule. The rule of thumb is less than a 1% variation between the population of separate districts. In terms of congressional districts, each district can elect only one person. And that's also a rule that the state in the 2020 legislation also applied to the state Senate, the state House, as well as the state school board. And then often two basic principles that are often used to combat gerrymandering are contiguity and compactness. One of the requirements is that districts need to be contiguous, which means that no part of a district should be separated from another part. And then also compactness. Districts should not spread out and cover vast areas to the degree that they don't really need to. So those are two other mandatory principles.
Well, that's a tough thing to do in Utah. I went to our citizen tool at utahfoundation.org/redistricting and spent a while playing with it. And it's really difficult to get, number one, four districts that are all kind of the same size. Now, these are all congressional districts, of course. But then number two, and I guess this is going to get to some of the other provisions there, it's impossible to get all of Salt Lake County into one district. Can you talk about that and maybe the provisions that apply to that?
It's a little bit tricky to divide Utah up into four equal slices without including some groups that might not feel like they're all that similar, or without including vast tracts of a rural area with really concentrated urban districts. Juggling these different principles is a tricky business. You have to make sure that every district has the same population. You want to make sure that the districts aren't cut up into pieces and separated from each other. And you want to make sure that they're as reasonably as compact as possible. And so doing all that at the same time, you're going to have to find some sort of balance. There's going to be some sort of give on compactness in order to make sure that there's an equal population. And so there's definitely trade-offs as you try and optimize each one of these principles.
There are also principles that apply to things like communities of interest and keeping political subdivisions intact.
Yeah.
And that's tough to do as well.
Yeah. So the way that this legislation is set up is that essentially there's four kind of mandatory principles that the redistricting committee has to focus on, which is that an equal population, single member districts, contiguity, and compactness. But then there's also an additional six priorities that they're supposed to focus on, but these have a little bit more give in the language. These are just supposed to be implemented to the extent practical. These priorities include things like preserving communities of interest, trying to follow geological and man-made boundaries, minimizing the division of municipalities and counties, trying to make sure the different types of districts, you know, from congressional districts to the state school board, trying to make sure that those districts kind of agree on where the boundaries are. And then also there's a provision too that expressly prohibits the purposeful favoring or disfavoring of a party or incumbent or potential candidates. And those are, you know, those are additional set of priorities that you kind of have to juggle and weigh against each other as you come down with these maps. Some of the hard parts about that in terms of minimizing the division of counties and cities is that Salt Lake County is too big to have a single representative represent the entire county. And then it becomes a question of what's the best way to divide it up. Based on the past redistricting, policymakers felt it was best to divide Salt Lake County into three portions, essentially, assigning out a part of the urban core into different areas of the state. You could theoretically fit a large portion of Salt Lake County in one district and then kind of have the southern part of Salt Lake County combined with Utah County to create two very compact, very urban districts, and then kind of divide up the rest of the state somewhere else. Those are some of the hard decisions that a redistricting committee is going to have to make.
I think there are some interesting matters for interpretation here, too. When you think about physical boundaries and man-made boundaries, so I would think, for instance, that in Salt Lake County, for instance, I-15 is a significant man-made boundary that would potentially divide one legislative district from another, for instance. But then you have physical boundaries, like the boundary between Salt Lake City and Park City. But to some extent, you could say, well, this is kind of a community interest, and it's connected by I-80. There are some interesting interpretive issues that have to get sorted out, right?
Oh, yeah. On each one of these principles, there's different ways that people can understand them. I mean, in terms of compactness, there's 20 different ways of measuring compactness, from like essentially making it as compact as it can on a map as opposed to like making it compact based on the center of population. In terms of preserving communities of interest, it's very much open to interpretation over, you know, what does a community look like, and, you know, which communities in particular are classified as communities of interest.
Sure. For instance, I just think about East Mill Creek versus West Mill Creek, just given the shape of the city, where as in East Mill Creek, you might feel like you're more connected to Holiday. And in West Mill Creek, you might feel like you're more connected to South Salt Lake.
And I think there's a really good example of this in terms of rural Utah versus urban Utah. In many ways, those who live in the Four Corners area of Utah in San Juan County are lumped in with people from Salt Lake County. But in all honesty, they probably have a more similar way of life and more community similarities with maybe Rich County and the Bear Lake area, despite being on opposite sides of the state.
Right. And it's just the very concentrated population along the Wasatch Front that complicates that matter so much.
Right. Yeah.
So, Christopher, just looking at it from the outside, not having been kind of in the room as the state legislation was being drafted, what is your impression? How much did the legislative language change the original provisions and the original maybe intents of the Better Boundaries referendum language?
There's a number of changes where it was honestly a little bit hard for me to gauge the full impact. I can see a lot of possibilities, but it's hard to know for sure how this will all play out. But some of the important changes that we can highlight is that the 2020 legislation made the original 2018 proposition. It kind of resulted in a commission, as well as the commissioners themselves, being less independent from the legislature. If the legislature ultimately decides not to go with one of the commission's maps, originally in the 2018 proposition, they kind of had to justify a reason why and provide that document. Under the new legislation in 2020, no justification is really needed. So there's a lower level of transparency. Also, the commission itself, as well as the commissioners, are less independent from the state legislature. The state legislature now has a little bit of more oversight and more control over who they pick to be on the commission. There's a lower bar in terms of ethics as well. Both the code of ethics was removed from the legislation, as well as standards that prohibited the use of partisan or individual candidate data. The restriction on that data was removed as well, kind of reducing the ethical bar of what could be used. So those were the three main changes.
Sure. Now, was some of that done, at least ostensibly, to protect the state from lawsuits or as to constitutionality or to the provisions of the law itself?
Those ones were a little bit less connected to that. These same changes could definitely be viewed in an entirely different light. For example, appointed officials make many uncomfortable because they have no, like they're not legally bound to the people in the same way that elected officials are. So many people might be in favor of providing a greater level of oversight by elected officials of this independent commission. Also, so the Utah State Constitution grants the legislative branch this power of redistricting. And so these legislative changes just kind of maintain the status quo in that sense going forward. There were some worries about some provisions involving the state Supreme Court, where it was a little bit unclear as if that would be unconstitutional or not. And so those provisions were removed, which prevent potential lawsuits against the state. A provision allowing offended parties to sue the state was also removed. So there's less liability in this for the state, kind of protects the state from potentially frivolous lawsuits.
So it seems like the upshot is that we have a process that remains within the control of the legislature, but which does provide guidance to the legislature. And by doing so, maybe kind of provides a standard against which the ultimate decisions of the legislature would be judged. So it does seem to potentially increase accountability from that standpoint.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how it all plays out. I mean, this is a new is a completely new thing for Utah. We've never had anything like this. So it'll be interesting to see the interplay between the commission and the state legislature. But I think that's a really good point, that the suggestions by the commission will at least be a standard on which to judge the legislative decisions.
Well, Christopher, I have to say I did play with the redistricting tool that you created and put up on our website, and it's pretty addictive. The strategic part of your brain gets tickled as you try to figure out how to put this puzzle together statewide. So I hope that citizens in general have as much fun as I did playing with this thing.
Like, I've always been a little bit interested in redistricting, and kind of when it came up in 2018, I started thinking about the Utah's congressional districts and how Salt Lake County is divided up three different ways. And I thought, I could do a better job. As me and a friend started playing around with the numbers, we realized it was a lot more difficult than we initially expected. There's a lot of things to balance here, and getting it all just right, you can spend a lot of time doing it.
Thanks so much, Christopher. Good talking to you.
Well, thanks for having me.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org. Thanks for listening.